Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, September 29th, 2022. Community Roundup. Elections Office needs bilingual workers. The Midland County Elections Office is looking for bilingual workers to help with early voting. Those interested and able to speak English and Spanish can give the Elections Office a call at 432-688-4890. MLK programs for kids. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation will be hosting new programs for kids at the MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, starting October 3rd. They include 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Monday, game nights for ages 6 to 14 years of age. We will have a variety of board games for the kids to play. 5:30 to 7 p.m. Thursday, arts and crafts for ages 6 through 14 years of age. 11 a.m. Wednesday, story time for tots. Each program will be $1 to participate and can be paid at the front desk upon arrival. Contact LaSalle M. Williams at lswilliams@midlandtexas.gov. For more information. Community calendar. Texas Size Garage Sale, October 7th and 8th and October 11th and 12th at 407 East Scarborough Drive. Writers Workshop, October 8th and 9th at Midland College. Pink in the Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., October 15th. At Centennial Park. 33rd Annual Tom Arnold Memorial Fish Fry, 5 to 8 p.m., October 15th, at the American Legion Building, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane. Midland Northside Lions Club's 19th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review Fundraiser, 7:30 p.m., October 15th. At the Hispanic Cultural Center. Alzheimer's Association to End Alzheimer's, 9 a.m. October 15th at Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive. Visit alz.org/walk. West Texas Women's Symposium, October 19th and 20th at the Bush Convention Center. Fall festivals, trunk or treats, county fairs. Midland Bible Church, Country Fair, 4 to 7 p.m., October 30th, at 5900 Whitman. Election 2022 debates and forums. Reporter Telegram MISD debates, October 18th, for districts 3 and 7. P.M. District 3, 7 p.m. District 5, 7:45 p.m. District 6, 8:30 p.m. at the Carrasco Room at Midland College. Reporter Telegram City of Midland debates, October 20th. District 4, 7 p.m. Mayoral, 7:50 p.m. at the Carrasco Room at Midland College. League of Women Voters, October 6th, MISD, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., and City of Midland, 6:45 to 7:45 p.m., in the Carrasco Room at Midland College. Basin PBS, October 11th, 13th, and 17th, the debates will be televised, MISD School Board from 7 to 8:30 p.m. October 11th. Mayoral Forum from 7 to 8 p.m. October 13th. And Midland City Council, 7 to 8 p.m. October 17th. The Midland Republican National Hispanic Assembly will have forums on October 17th and 19th. The MISD candidates will go from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Spring Hill Suites, 5716 Deauville Boulevard. The Midland City Council forums will be from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. for mayor on October 19th, and from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. for District 4. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland on October 22nd at the MLK Junior Community Center. The forums will include judges, school board, and city council candidates at 10 a.m. and mayoral candidates at 1 p.m. What's up with Midland? Midland Beer Garden. Legends of hip-hop karaoke, Friday and Saturday. Midland Community Theater. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum in Maybe Theater 2, Friday and Saturday. Museum of the Southwest. Playdate, ages 0 to 2, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Friday. Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to 12 noon, every Saturday. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Kevin James, Friday. Divas 3, October 11th. Cinema Under the Stars, Hocus Pocus, October 20th. Windwalker Farms. Black Gold Registered Shoot, Saturday and Sunday. At the Horseshoe. Saving True Pears and Pink the Basin, 10th anniversary, October 7th. Permian Basin Bookies Incorporated. Writers Workshop, October 8th and 9th. Hispanic Culture Center. Roar with Laughter, hosted by the Midland Northside Lions Club, October 15th. The Garlic Press. Beer Dinner, October 17th. Christ Church Anglican. Festival of St. Francis Pet Blessing, plus 5K, October 22nd. Midland Humane Coalition Furriesta Gala, October 22nd.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, September 24, 2022. Few points. Questions for the candidates. How do you approach a superintendent and learning staff which appears to have Midland ISD on a growth trajectory? Do you actually believe the trajectory is better? Either way, how does this change with Superintendent Ramsey's departure? Tommy Bishop, MISD District 3 candidate. Process in place today will carry Midland ISD forward. When Dr. Angelica Ramsey departed, she left us with a strong team of academic leaders and a system in place to continue the work that was started at MISD. The turnaround that her team, staff, and teachers have completed this last year was excellent. With her leaving, we expect the team to carry on with the momentum of success that they have going now. While in the process of searching for a new leader, superintendent, the expectation is for our administration, principals, and teachers to continue the success. We also have three teams that are leading our campuses. Charlie Garcia is leading the Maroon team, which consists of Legacy High School and the campuses that feed into this school. Dr. Luz Martinez leads our Purple team, Midland High School, and all of the campuses that feed into this school. Dr. Serrano is leading our Achievement Zone campuses. We want the new superintendent that is leading the team to come in without any major changes to the system that's in place to still allow our teachers and principals to have professional development and the resources being invested where it matters most to have a positive impact on student growth. Reagan Inyojos, MISD District 3 candidate. With focus in place, academic victories will continue in MISD. In 2017, the Texas Educational Agency met with MISD because so many of its campuses were failing, and subsequently, Lone Star governance was implemented. Its intention, according to MISD, is to provide continuous improvement framework for governing teams, boards in collaboration with their superintendents, who elect to a concentrated focus on one primary objective, improving student outcomes. It was reported back in July that the district had met every goal except for one, and this had not been achieved in 5 years. These results were further bolstered and reflected by the results of STAR testing, which moved our district into a B rating. These results revealed that MISD is currently on a strong start, trending into growth territory after more than a decade of decline. The important question, will it continue with Dr. Ramsey's departure and with her replacement? An important lesson I have learned through my own experiences as a business owner, serving on boards, through service to my church, volunteering my time, and actively supporting education initiatives in Midland, no organization can sustain itself without the support of others and cannot rely solely on one person. What makes any institution successful is a strong collaboration of quality leadership that is sustainable. My questions for any superintendent would be simply, are we achieving our goals? And if not, why? What are we doing to ensure that our leadership and learning staff are maintaining achievement goals regardless of leadership changes at the campus or district level? As a district, we need to carefully identify and select quality leaders, department chairs, teaching coaches, principals, administrators, district department heads. Each position entrusted with management should exemplify open and honest communication with parents, teachers, and students. The overall mission of MISD should be focused on student outcomes and achievement. This can be attained through workplace culture that nurtures collaboration, honesty, accountability, and community. With a new superintendent on the horizon, there is a big question mark in relation to our position going forward with the growth trajectory. Everyone wants to know, now what? For years, I have heard educators discuss their own desires for stability in the district to effectively move forward. Change can only be as good as the follow-through. I believe an unnecessary burden would be cast upon our teachers and students alike if drastic transformation is the result of every leadership transition. If we are an outcome-driven district, it is important to stay the course, despite staff changes of any level. On that note, it is important to consider the merit in hiring existing employees for open roles. Promoting from within signifies the value of the career progression of employees. The concept not only has potential to increase workplace morale and engagement, it gives people with experience in our community and our district the opportunity to continue to see the programs currently in place through. This route could potentially allow our team to have more time and a better overview for evaluating the results of systems currently in place. In brief, we have at least 1 year of measurement that reflects a path of progress, as reported to the school board in July 2022. We need to continue this course of action by encouraging a careful balance of collaboration, honesty, accountability, and community involvement on campus and within the district. From the wise words of an exemplary former teacher and principal, any practice that is research-based and followed with fidelity and support long-term will show progress. We fail in a lack of patience and fully supporting the effort in follow-up and monitoring. It is no secret that our educators and students have all been categorically fatigued since 2020. By keeping our focus on the efforts currently in place, it is likely that we will see continued victory in our overall academic outcomes. John Trichetti III, MISD District 5 candidate. New MISD chief will benefit from growth happening. As has been reported in this publication, by any measure, MISD has seen improvement when compared to recent years and is on a growth trajectory. The hard work being done in the classroom by our teachers and support staff is paying dividends. They should be lauded and praised, not told by a subset of the community that the positive results are in some way smoke and mirrors and not truly indicative of a positive trend in outcomes. Everyone in the state is playing by the same rules, and while we do not establish the metrics, we are expected to adhere to the state's measurements. The growth trajectory is real. The scores are real. The improvement is real. To say otherwise is doing a disservice to the students and teachers who worked so hard to make the improvements a reality. While the loss of a leader, especially a superintendent, can be challenging for any large organization, the district has a strong leadership staff in place to support the work that is happening in the classroom, and that work will continue to happen as we go about the search for the next superintendent of schools for MISD. The systems and procedures in place should help to mitigate any turbulence that could be felt as the district goes about the process of finding a new leader. Several larger issues facing the district cannot be tackled without a superintendent in place. For example, I do not feel that a bond issue can be discussed until we have identified our next leader. They are in place and have had time to review the long-range strategic plan and create community buy-in. Brandon Hodges, MISD District 5 candidate. Don't encumber teachers, staff that did the hard work. First off, anytime there is a change in leadership, there is a time of chaos that ensues through the organization. It is important to be sensitive to staff during this period and make sure we are practicing change management to our best of abilities. This also allows us to set expectations with our interim superintendent. As a board member, this is a very important time to have clear and concise communication with all stakeholders. Throughout this interim process, we need to remember the most important piece of our academic improvement, teachers and support staff. We need to make sure we are listening and acting on concerns coming from them. This is a time to limit the lost and translation moments by being at our best with professional communication. There is no doubt that we have seen an improvement academically within MISD. It is because of the hard work and never-ending work ethic of our teachers and those that support them. While becoming a B-rated district for the first time in a decade is excellent to wake up to, I am optimistically skeptical that over half of all the districts in Texas became B-rated overnight. It is also a great time as a community to take stock in the direction our school district is taking. As a community, we need to remember the school board works for us, not the other way around. It is time for community members and those concerned with education in Midland to reach out to the school board and let them know what their expectations are in a new superintendent. Community and parental involvement across Midland are going to be important regarding whether we continue to improve or regress in terms of academics. During this time, our interim superintendent needs to keep the curriculum consistent and simple across the district. We should continue to focus on the growth areas, reading and writing, math and science, and social studies. As a board member, I will always focus on academics and student outcomes and hold our leadership accountable, even during the difficult transition times. This is a major paradigm shift in thinking from the incumbent. He is always preoccupied with purchasing country clubs and apartment complexes or integrating unproven pedagogies such as SEL and Banned Books Week in our local secondary school libraries, when we should be focused on the basics during a transitional period. Since the students are on minutes, every minute matters. We must choose carefully. If we are a district that is focused on improving student outcomes, we should do just that, which is to keep it simple and not encumber the ones that did the hard work for improvement, our teachers, with unproven gimmicks out of Austin and Washington, D.C. please follow my campaign at www.facebook.com/HodgesMISD5. Carrie McNeil, MISD District 6 candidate. Ramsey's departure provides school district an opportunity. Due to the recent departure of Dr. Ramsey, we are once again searching for a new superintendent. Rather than dwell on our frustrations and disappointment, I prefer to look at this as an opportunity. We have the luxury of learning from our past mistakes and using those hard lessons moving forward. I believe we need to reevaluate what we deem as important and expand our desired criteria. We all want our children to succeed and improve our academics. However, the way we achieve that goal is where our visions differ. While Dr. Ramsey's tenure was brief, we do not have enough time to truly classify her vision as a successful path forward. I believe a truly successful vision needs to be calculated by more than testing scores. True success comes with improved academic outcomes, a healthy work culture, retaining qualified, quality teachers and staff, and parental participation. As we start this interview process, I believe it is imperative to listen to the wants and needs of our parents and teachers. Most importantly, we want someone who wants to be here, someone willing to put down some roots and make some memories. I would prefer someone with some West Texas ties that understands and recognizes we aren't Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, or Austin. Being west of I-35 brings a different perspective to our needs, goals, and problems. MISD shouldn't be just another stepping stone on someone's resume. Professional growth and achievement should always be encouraged, but not at the expense of our children. The constant change in leadership is hard on our kids and teachers. Each superintendent brings their own vision and change, and unfortunately, this is a constant wave of chaos for our programs and achievement. Secondly, I am looking for someone willing to dig deep into current curriculum and programs and help eliminate some of these programs and expensive contracts that do not have clear academic goals. I am seeing more programs that focus more on a cultural and social platform than true education. Education needs to focus on true education. Lastly, we need a superintendent that runs a lean ship and will eliminate some of our excessive administrative load and push that budget back to the classroom. In having a revolving door on superintendents, I believe we have created many replicated positions that simply support a different title. I believe this causes confusion within our district about the chain of command and who needs to be contacted when an issue arises. We need a leader that will help us define clear roles and expectations within our district. Once a new superintendent is selected, my hope is for a more comprehensive contract that protects the superintendent, but also our district. This new person will need to have some true grit for the position and a genuine love for our community. The new superintendent will have a tall order to fill. However, I believe the right person can be found, and most importantly, this process cannot be rushed.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness, for Wednesday, September 28th, 2022. MHH strives toward healthiest county status. Making Midland the healthiest community in Texas is Midland Health's vision. In order to strive toward our vision, we need to understand the community's needs first. Every 4 years, a new community health needs assessment is completed to find the most critical needs in the community. The CHNA begins with an extensive process of gathering quantitative and qualitative data, interviews with stakeholders and community leaders, statistics and demographics on health status in the Midland community. Once all data is reviewed, Midland Health leadership prioritizes the areas that result in six significant needs. Priorities from the CHNA build a framework for Midland Health initiatives represented in the implementation plan. The implementation plan is designed to continue our community outreach and develop new programs to reduce barriers to health care. This CHNA emphasizes affordable care and reducing health disparities among specific populations. the entire hospital will play a part in the CHNA and make strides to lead healthcare for Greater Midland. According to the Health County rankings, supported by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Midland County is ranked number 32 in health outcomes. Health outcomes consist of a person's length of life and quality of life, like physical health days, mental health days, and poor or fair health. Midland County is ranked number 36 for health factors that account for health behaviors, i.e. smoking, obesity, and sexually transmitted infections. Clinical care, i.e. uninsured, number of physicians, preventable hospital stays, and screenings. Social and economic factors, i.e. education level, children in poverty, and violent crime. And physical environment, i.e. air pollution and drinking water violations. Midland's Health County rankings validate our progress, but there is still work to be done to reach our vision. Take a deeper look into Midland Health's implementation plan priorities. Continued emphasis on health care, workforce recruitment, and retention. Midland's population fluctuates due to other businesses in town. Midland Health is engaging in physician recruitment, coupled with strategies to retain physicians and remove burnout during all the ebbs and flows of our growing community. Access to mental and behavioral health care services and providers. There is a crucial need for additional mental and behavioral health services and physicians in the community. Midland Health is prioritizing access to mental and behavioral health care services. One project Midland Health is currently focused on is a comprehensive mental health facility for the Permian Basin in conjunction with Ector County Hospital District. Prevention, education, and services to address high mortality rates, chronic disease, preventable conditions, and unhealthy lifestyles. There has been a slight uptick in chronic diseases and illnesses in Midland. Midland Health will work on programs and educational opportunities to promote healthy lifestyles and behaviors. Removing healthcare disparities and improving healthcare equity will be at the forefront of these initiatives. Increased emphasis on education and awareness of existing healthcare resources. Similarly to our previous priority, Midland Health plans to provide education, promote the resources available to the community, and partner with organizations that can assist with health and wellness resources. Continued focus on COVID-19 prevention and response. COVID-19 turned many lives upside down. We aim to continue offering programs to reduce the spread of COVID-19 and provide education on new updates to keep the community at low risk. Increased emphasis on safe sex education, communicable disease prevention, family planning, and prenatal and postnatal care. Midland Health plans to provide programs and education promoting healthy pregnancy and childbirth. We plan to partner with organizations to help prevent the spread of communicable diseases and increase sex education. Partnering with Midland Health teams, outside organizations, and the community will be vital in executing the CHNA implementation objectives. Please reach out if you or your organization can help in any of the priority areas. We are better when we work together to create the healthiest community in Texas. The complete CHNA and implementation plan can be viewed at midlandhealth.org/CHNA. Grow as a healthy person by using comparison. Theodore Roosevelt once stated, quote, "Comparison is the thief of joy," end quote. Yes, we have the tendency to allow comparing ourselves to others through social media, workplaces, friendships, family, and the list goes longer than any of us expected. For the most part, comparing our bodies, qualities, successes, and material items can lead to depriving ourselves from embracing our own uniqueness. I have counseled several clients of all ages who continue to struggle with the reality of their uniqueness versus societal expectations. The struggle caused them to question their capabilities, lower their self-esteem levels, and live more for the approval of others. What else do we do but compare ourselves to others when we see selfies, accomplishments, and new purchases as we scroll through social media or talk to our loved ones about what is going on in their lives? It is a new trend that is difficult to resist or unlearn at times. However, if we have the capability to learn something, we also have the capability to unlearn it. How do we stop comparing when it is all around us? We can begin to stop comparing once we engage in our own creativity and use it as a tool instead. Triggers. Identify what negatively stimulates us and ends up driving ourselves to react with comparison. Become self-aware of what provokes us to perceive ourselves in a negative way so that we can reduce the chances of our mental health negatively being affected. Gratitude. Let us practice giving attention to the little things that brighten our day and write them down to look back to remind ourselves of the good when we are not feeling our best. This contributes to making the positive and productive things in our lives louder than the obstacles. Encouragement. Let us support and encourage others who are stretching their comfort zone and embrace their decisions for as they are, whether they directly affect us or not. This brings attention to welcoming uniqueness and acceptance that we are all okay to be different. If we were all robots, what fun would that be? Although comparison can take away our ability to be present and in the moment with ourselves, it does not mean we must choose to look at it negatively. We can use comparison either as a temporary crutch or as a steering stone to grow as a healthy individual. If we can be of assistance, feel free to contact Samaritan Counseling Center at 432-563-4144.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading several sports articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American from the past few days. We'll begin with the Odessa American, Sunday, September 25th. High school football, week 5. Panthers cap emotional week with victory. Permian 5-0 heading to bye week, by Lee Scheide. Life reared its head right in the middle of Permian season. Defensive coordinator Vance Washington's son, Robbie, was killed in an accident earlier in the week. The Panthers circled the wagons around their longtime coach as he continued to work while taking time away to handle what was needed for his son, a 2016 Permian graduate who was a linebacker on the football team. Before Friday's game against visiting Abilene Cooper, the Permian captains, Bryce Woody, Rodney Hall, and Harris Sewell, carried Robbie Washington's jersey, number 12, to midfield for the coin toss. It was a moment that the elder Washington wasn't expecting as he accepted hugs from the players on the sideline. The Panthers then went and handled business on the field to the tune of a 56-28 victory that wasn't that close at Ratliff Stadium. Vance Washington was the first coach up the stairs looking to reunite with family after the game. "It's been tough," he said, "but the amount of support and messages I've gotten from everyone has been incredible, and I can't thank them enough." Permian head coach Jeff Ellison had one more surprise as he presented the game ball to Washington to the joy of a raucous locker room. "This week, we as coaches really leaned on the players," Ellison said. "I was proud of the way the players worked all week and understood what was going on and gave support to Coach Washington. This was a time where football was secondary to what was going on, and I thought the players handled it well." On the field, it was, for the most part, the most complete game the Permian football game has played this season. Running back Justice Lara scored 4 touchdowns, and 4 other Panthers found the end zone in the final non-district game of the season. The victory improved Permian to 5-0 as it heads into a bye week before beginning District 2-6A play on October 7th against crosstown rival Odessa High. To Barry Jones, Jaquan Richardson, Rodney Hall, and Jonathan Viscano also scored for the Panthers, who amassed 541 yards of offense, including 311 yards rushing. Richardson finished with 7 catches for 158 yards and 1 touchdown, while Hall was 16 of 20 passing for 230 yards and 1 score. Viscano was the lead rusher with 82 yards on 9 carries, all in the fourth quarter. "I thought our offensive coaching staff did a great job this week as we had to move some players around," Ellison said. "There are still some things we need to work on, but I'm so proud of the way they played tonight." The Cougars dropped to 2-3 on the season, but proved to be an opportunistic bunch on the night. Abilene Cooper forced 4 Panthers fumbles and found the end zone on 3 of the ensuing drives. Dondre Walston hauled in a pair of 13-yard touchdown passes from quarterback Chris Warren, and wide receiver Cameron Herron took a sweep around the right side and went 52 yards for a score, breaking several tackles along the way. Herron also had a 99-yard kickoff return for a touchdown to keep the Cougars in the game with 3:58 to play in the first quarter. That came after Permian found the end zone after its first 2 drives. Jones finished the first with a 6-yard touchdown run, and Lara capped the second with a 3-yard run. Warren finished 14 of 26 passing for 178 yards and 2 touchdowns and 1 interception. Riding the ship, Broncos stopped 2-game skid with victory against Schertz Clemens by Samir Mala. Odessa High bounced back from 2 rough weeks of play with a solid effort against Schertz Clemens in non-district play Saturday at Ratliff Stadium. The Broncos came out firing on all cylinders in their spread hurry-up, up-tempo offense, opening a 3-score lead in the first quarter and never looking back in their 35-24 win. "That's something we preached all week," offensive coordinator Creighton Reed said. "Our first 2 games, we were able to play really, really fast and get the defense gassed. And with our offense, if we can pick up a first down, we score like on 80% of our drives. It's just picking up that first down and having success on first down and getting the tempo going. And tonight, we got it rolling from the get-go. Our first out of our first 6 possessions, we scored 5 touchdowns. And I think a lot of it was because of the tempo. The Buffalo's defense wasn't ready for it." Broncos head coach Dusty Ortiz concurred with Reed. "Our offense got a little creative. We were driving around, utilizing, or other weapons, and it just paid off," Ortiz said. "It was helpful when you get up in the first quarter when it was 21-0. Broncos quarterback Jaylen Jones targeted 7 different receivers for 239 yards and 3 touchdowns, none more than his top target and 6'6" wide receiver Ivan Kerrion. Kerrion, coming off a 0-catch performance last week against Amarillo High, had a team-high 10 catches for 158 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Buffaloes. "My performance was good," Kerrion said. "I just got to trust Coach Reed, and most of the balls I received were pretty good. We were able to run the ball this game, so it really set up the pass and the play-action plays." Coach Reed believed that the early first quarter lead and the strong ground game allowed for the big play threat of Kerrion to be in full effect on Saturday. "Our whole offense is about establishing a run game and Ivan just being patient," Reed said. "We're not going to put force feed, and we're going to run our offense and put him in situations to be successful." So from the very first go, our first play tonight was a down screen to him just to get him going and get them in touch and to get him confident again. Throughout the game, we found the matchups that put him in one-on-one situations or even two-on-one and moved the defenders around a little bit to make the defense move. "He had a great game, and our offensive line gave Jaylen time to make the throws to them. So our offense really just came together today and put on a show." The Broncos also racked up their first 3 turnovers of the season. The first was near a touchdown by defensive back Adrian Musquiz in the third quarter. He took the interception 88 yards for a touchdown, but the run back was called back to the Buffalo's 22-yard line due to an illegal block in the back penalty. The team also forced an interception and a game-sealing fumble recovery in the fourth quarter. Those turnovers came as a relief for Coach Ortiz. "I know the defensive staff was just super happy because we hadn't had any takeaways this whole season other than the scrimmage," Ortiz said. "Those are preparing you for the season, and so it was good to have the interceptions. It was good to have a fumble, you know. Hopefully that's going to be turned in our way on the next few weeks." The Broncos, 3-2, have a week off before starting District 2 6A play against Permian on October 7th at Ratliff Stadium. "We're hitting an open week this next week, and you always want to go into an open week with success," Ortiz said. "It just makes the week of practice that you don't have a game that much better. So we're going to go into this open week, let some lower bruises heal, but also start to prepare for that district game, our first one in 2 weeks." Now, from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, September 27th. High school football, MHS inspired by Perez, rolls to 74-14 win by Christopher Hattern. Midland High had every reason to be playing its most inspired football with its homecoming last Friday at Astound Broadband Stadium. Adding to their motivation was seeing senior LeBron Perez at the game, as he was announced as one of the team captains during the coin toss before they kicked off against El Paso Andres. Perez, who has spent the last month in Dallas receiving treatment for leukemia, got a nice applause from the crowd when he walked out to midfield in his number 4 jersey. And fittingly, it was Perez's brother, Briley Perez, who compiled the most rushing yards during a night when the Bulldogs set the team record for most rushing yards in a game. Briley Perez, a junior, ran 9 times for 187 yards and 2 touchdowns to propel MHS to a 74-14 blowout win over Andrus. The Bulldogs, 4-1, finished with 613 rushing yards on 43 attempts, which broke the team record of 558 they set earlier this season in a 56-28 win over El Paso Montwood. MHS also scored the most points in a game, 74, since 1950, and scored 35 points in the third quarter to set the team record for most points in a quarter. I had a lot of emotions going around because my brother, LeBrian, was here. And then my other brother, Brian Zai, from college, was here too, Briley Perez said. I was really playing for both of them. Thank God that we broke 3 records today because of that O-line. My brother is my motivation right now. Briley Perez had an impressive run during the 35-point third quarter as he broke through a tackle and stiff-armed another defender while running 34 yards to the end zone. Briley Perez set his career high for single-game rushing yards with his brother LeBrian present. He was at team breakfast, MHS head coach Thad Fortune said of LeBrian. Just to be able to hang out with LeBrian at the homecoming parade last night was special. LeBrian has been gone for a month, and we've been video messaging him over the phone, and some coaches got the opportunity to go see him. It's so great to have him back, that he's doing well enough to be back. We've been praying for him, and I know a lot of people have. It just shows the Midland High community has rallied around him and his family. It's really just a special thing. Him being here was just the cherry on top. While the Bulldogs are off to their best start in 6 years, Fortune said the team had some learning moments from the blowout win. With MHS leading 29-0, the Eagles, 1-4, put together an 11-play, 72-yard drive to cut their deficit to 29-7 with 2:57 left in the second quarter. On the ensuing drive, the Bulldogs fumbled away the football on an outside run, giving Andres a short field at the MHS 14 and a chance to get back into the ballgame. The Eagles couldn't capitalize, though, as they dropped a pass in the end zone on third down and ended up turning the ball over on downs. I will just be the bah humbug coach, Fortune said. Obviously, there's stuff to work on. I thought in the first half that we missed some opportunities that we have to take advantage of. We can't leave 6 points on the field. And just some different moments where we have the opportunities. We kind of got into a moment defensively when we got on our heels a little bit on that long touchdown drive they had. And we've got to learn to rally when those things are happening and put our feet 1 foot on the ground. The Bulldogs will have a bye week before hosting San Angelo Central, 3-2, in their District 2 6A opener on October 7th. Slow Start Dooms Legacy in Judson Loss by Christopher Hattern. Legacy dug so deep of a hole against Converse Judson that it couldn't climb its way out. The Rockets pounced on the Rebels with 47 unanswered points to start the game and held off for a 60-50 victory over Legacy during a non-district football game at DW Rutledge Stadium in Converse. Judson, 2-3, buried Legacy, 2-3, by climbing to a 41-0 lead after one quarter, and the Rockets held a 47-0 advantage with 8:03 left in the second quarter when Elijah Favela threw his 5th touchdown pass on a connection with Oklahoma commit Anthony Evans. Despite facing what seemed to be an insurmountable deficit, the Rebels managed to cut the score to 53-42 with 9:08 remaining when Marcos Davila threw a TD pass to Skylar Wilburn. But ultimately, LHS couldn't overcome Judson's early avalanche of points. The Rebels had 4 turnovers on their first 5 drives, with 2 fumbles lost and 2 interceptions. We had turnovers, LHS head coach Clint Hartman said. We had fumbled snaps, fumbles on the kickoff return. They drove down and they scored. They were just kicking our butt. They got all over us and we couldn't turn it on. Circumstances turned around for the Rebels at the 6:09 mark of the second quarter when linebacker Jesus Robledo intercepted a Judson pass and returned it for a touchdown, cutting the deficit to 47-7. Kenyon Moses added a 6-yard rushing TD, and Davila threw a TD pass to Colin Brazell to help LHS head into halftime with a 47-21 deficit that didn't seem as imposing, considering how bad the Rebels started the game. Davila scored on a 7-yard QB keeper to bring the Rebels within 47-27 with 7:30 left in the third. However, the Rockets finally answered as Nathaniel Stanley scored on a rushing TD to extend Judson's lead to 53-27 with 4:41 in the third. Davila threw 2 more passes early in the fourth quarter to narrow the deficit to 9 points before Stanley rushed his 4th rushing TD to give the Rockets a 3-score lead with 4:12 to play. Stanley had 28 carries for 138 yards, while Favela completed 30 of 40 passes for 442 yards, 5 TD passes, and an interception. We didn't get a stop, Hartman said. It's a tough situation. We didn't play well early. I'm proud of the way we fought. The point is, you can't start out like that in district play. Hartman said the Rebels were down to their 4th-string running back, Tommy Johnson, after Zeke Luna, Nathaniel Brito, and Madden Malloy all got injured. Luna and Brito were banged up early in the week, which prompted the coaching staff to move Johnson to tailback from his linebacker spot. Johnson, a junior, played running back on the JV last year. Johnson had 16 carries for 123 yards to lead the Rebels with the most yards from scrimmage. Tommy played well, Hartman said. This is a kid that works hard all the time. He doesn't say much. He's real quiet. He's like that guy you call Steady Eddie. He just keeps working and all of a sudden does a great job. Davila completed 17 of 33 passes for 244 yards, 4 TD passes, and 2 interceptions. Legacy's Aiden Serrano had 2 catches for 56 yards and 2 touchdowns, while Colin Brazell made 3 receptions for 40 yards and a TD. Malloy had 11 carries for 65 yards. The Rebels visit Woolworth Friendship 4-1 in their District 2-6A opener on October 7th. I take a lot away from it, Hartman said of the team's remarkable rally that fell short. The number one thing is I love the team. I'm not going to give them a moral victory. I told them, you can say you won the last 3 quarters, but football is a 4-quarter game. As bad as we started, I'm happy as you can be as far as our effort. But also, we have to correct the things that happened in that first quarter. And from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, September 28th. Area Football Notebook. Sparky gets tackle in Andrew's win. By Oscar Leroy. As well as his team played in a 64-14 victory over Lubbock High on Friday, Andrew's head coach Tom Harvey said the moment at the end of the game is what really stood out to him. With the game in hand and time running down, the students at Andrew's Mustang Bowl started chanting, "We want Sparky, we want Sparky," in reference to Evan Sparks, a player with the Mustangs with special needs. Harvey said Lubbock High coach Juan Rodriguez noticed the chants and called timeout. He sent the referee to tell us to put number 34 in and they won't touch him. He's tiny and they ran the ball right at him and the kid gave himself up so that Evan could make a tackle, Harvey said. The Andrews sideline erupted and players lifted Sparks on their shoulders in celebration and carried him off the field. In a video, Sparks could be seen pumping up the home crowd after the moment. It was a chance created by Lubbock coach Juan Rodriguez to make life more important than football for a minute. It was an honor and a privilege to be a part of it, Harvey said. I've been given too much credit for it, but I had no hand in it other than putting the kid in. The Lubbock staff created the moment. I think Coach Rodriguez is a special person and a great fit for that school. Rodriguez told Lubbock KCBD-TV that this was a valuable teaching moment for his team. This is an opportunity to understand the moment, understand that there are things outside of football that sometimes are a lot more important that we need to focus on, said Rodriguez on his message to his team. Harvey said the homecoming crowd was amazing and that several Mustang fans had to go to the visitor's side of the stadium to sit because there was no room left on the home side. The homecoming court also had a couple of special needs students, and Harvey said the community wanted to show up and support the kids. It was a special night, Harvey said. Everyone played, everyone contributed. It was a community effort, and seeing that really galvanized our team. While the win got Andrews 4-1 back in the win column, the Mustangs were left with an unforgettable moment. The Mustangs next travel to play at Canyon 5-0 on Friday. Greenwood hopes to rebound from loss. The Greenwood football team is still trying to put it all together this season. The Rangers, 2-3, are coming off a 21-14 loss to Canyon, and head coach Rusty Purser said every time they would do something on offense, the defense couldn't answer, and when the defense would get a stop, the offense couldn't answer. We are just playing one-way football, and we don't see each other very much, Purser said. This week, we've tried to work together a little more and get our kids to be a better team. We need to communicate and celebrate victories together. We have spent these last couple of days having to work toward a common goal of let's go win this game together. The Rangers also hope to stop the roller coaster ride that they've been on this season as they have yet to put strong back-to-back performances together. We have not won a close game in 2 years, Purser said. We've either blown out people or we've lost. The Estacado game, a 28-24 loss, is a game we should have won. The Canyon game could have gone both ways, as those were two good teams. We just didn't do what we needed to win. We need to kind of look at everything to see what, if anything, we need to change. We need to look at the coaching, the execution, and the effort. We kind of need to analyze everything. You try not to let it eat you up and distract from what you need to do. We need to figure out with our football team what we need to do to become the team we expect to be at the end. Purser said one of the things his team has done well is rebound after a loss. That's what it needs to do again this week when they travel to San Angelo Lakeview 3-2, which is coming off a 17-0 loss to Loveland. The Rangers would also love to get some momentum going into District 3-4A Division 2 play next week. It's important that we go to San Angelo and play well, Purser said. Hopefully we can come back with a win to propel us going into district. I've heard about other teams having the week off before their district begins, but our grind is right now. We've got 3 weeks before our open week, and we need to play well right now. We're as healthy as we've been all season, so we can't use that as an excuse. Fast start propels Big Spring. Big Spring won its fourth straight game as they jumped out to a 27-7 lead against Snyder and held on for a 27-24 home victory. It was 27-7 at halftime, and things kind of slowed down a little bit, got a little conservative, and they made some adjustments. Big Spring coach Cannon McWilliams said, "I think the big thing was that we came out ready to play, did some good things early, and that got us off to a good start." The Steers also had a good game from the Reporter Telegram's Area Football Player of the Week, Gavin Padrone, who completed 29 of 40 passes for 302 yards and 4 TDs. Big Spring, 4-1, will put that winning streak on the line when it travels to Seminole, 4-1, at 7 p.m. Friday in what could be a shootout. "It's going to be a good one," McWilliams said. "It's kind of a mirror image. They kind of do the same things that we do offensively. It's going to be a fun game." Garden City readies for rematch. Fresh off a win against the number one ranked team in Class 1A Division 1, Garden City now has to get ready for a rematch. After knocking off Westbrook 46-42 last Friday, the number seven ranked Bearcats, 4-1, host Van Horn, 2-2, on Friday in a rematch of last year's bi-district playoff game won by the Eagles. Garden City coach Jeff Jones said his team had great preparation going into the Westbrook game and hopes it will have that same focus going into this week's game. Knowing that was the number one team and we were coming off a loss, we had a really good week of practice, Jones said. I like the way that we were able to battle back after they jumped out 22-8 on us. We could have laid down. We had some turnovers, had some penalties, and we fought through it and the defense played well. We were able to stick with it. This was the second straight win over Westbrook as the Bearcats handed the Wildcats one of their four losses last year before Westbrook went on a late season run to win the state title. Last year when we beat them, they had a bunch of injuries and were banged up when we played them, Jones said. We just match up with them pretty good and we know what they like to do. These seniors have been playing them since the seventh grade. It's one of those games that we get up for. Jones said the win was good in getting statewide recognition. Playing Westbrook helped his team get better and get ready for district play. It wasn't our Super Bowl, and we would love a chance to play them again. And it might happen, Jones said.
Carpal tunnel syndrome surgery side effects. Dear Dr. Roach, I had carpal tunnel surgery 2 years ago. I now have trigger fingers in my index and middle fingers. I had cortisone injections, but that didn't cure it. I, at one point, was not able to open my fingers. Now my fingers are really stiff, and I can't bend them. When they get down too far, they lock. But usually they're so stiff I can't bend them. Surgery was suggested. I'm hesitant because I'm wondering if this will get better on its own with exercises. JT. Answer, trigger finger is caused by the tendon getting stuck inside one of the pulleys of the hand. To the best of my knowledge, carpal tunnel surgery doesn't predispose to trigger finger, but there are some conditions that put people at risk for both conditions. Initial treatment of trigger finger is conservative with splinting and anti-inflammatory drugs. If that doesn't work, injection of cortisone by a hand surgeon is usually successful. Most of the hand surgeons I know will try injection 3 times before recommending surgery. People who have not gotten better with conservative treatment and injection generally do not get better on their own, though a few people will. Unfortunately, postponing surgery too long can lead to the finger getting a contracture, which will not straighten at all. It's best to have surgery before this complication occurs.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, September 29th. Single professional woman rebuked for personal choice. Dear Abby, I am almost 30, not married, no kids. I am a workaholic. I love my nieces and nephews to death, and being an aunt is one of my favorite things ever. My issue is, I don't want to have kids. I started dating again a few months back, and it seems like any man I go on a date with thinks he can change my mind about kids. I have personal medical reasons for not wanting to give birth. Of course, if I do meet a man who has kids, that would be perfect. I'd be a great mom. So why is it I get called dirty names because I choose not to have kids? Everyone says I'll change my mind once I meet the right guy, but this isn't a negotiable issue. If we want to adopt or consider other options for kids, I am more than willing. There are children who need a home more than I need to bring one into this world just to pass on my DNA. Please help me understand what I am missing. Signed, Unwavering in Idaho. Dear Unwavering, not every woman wants to bear children. That is a fact. For someone to call you dirty names because of how you feel is judgmental and presumptuous. Motherhood should be, and is, a personal choice, and birth control allows us the freedom to exercise that choice as we see fit. It's possible you may be dating in the wrong age group. If you concentrate on older men who most likely already have children, I'm betting you will receive less flack and have a better outcome. There are also dating apps for couples who want to remain child-free or for those who are already parents. Check them out. Dear Abby, my girlfriend has a penchant for long stories many times on the phone, which are trivial. This morning she called and proceeded to describe at length a nightmare she'd had last night. I try, I really do, to listen, but I usually wind up thinking, what's the point of having a long conversation about a nightmare? Because I got bored, I started using the computer to search for some meal coupons. When I found them, I interrupted her monologue, which led to a back-and-forth accusatory interchange, I interrupt you, you interrupt me, etc., etc. I have always been easily bored with long-winded conversations about minor issues or non-issues. People sometimes criticize me because it's obvious I'm not paying attention. How do I fix this so people don't get offended when they persist with these pointless stories? Today, I had to hang up as our discussion was escalating. Signed, Easily Bored in Las Vegas. Dear Easily Bored, if this happens regularly, the problem may be that you have a short attention span. However, if that's not the case, it's time you realize that relationships are based on people taking the time to communicate with each other. This includes hearing and listening as well as talking. If you value your relationship with your girlfriend, try to make more of an effort and help her to compromise by pointing out how she can edit some of her longer monologues. Dear Abby, this may seem kind of morbid, but I want to know if I should write a letter to my daughter and son to be read after my death to let them know how very proud I am to have been their mother. Is this an okay thing to do? Signed, Grateful Mom in the Midwest. Dear Grateful Mom, I see nothing wrong with it. However, an even better thing to do would be to convey that message to your son and daughter often while you are still among the living.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.